Press play.
Curtain up and now we're in.
It's time to take a spin.
The shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama. Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nominated?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life
in New York City
and
the world. I'm Connor McDowell.
And I'm Dylan McDowell. Connor, how are you tonight?
I'm great.
I'm getting into this groove of doing like evening recordings again because everyone's got stuff to do during the day now.
I know. I'm great. I'm so excited for this guest. Oddly worked all day, which is a new sensation for me. And as I've said before, I don't know if I like working. So
I hope none of your coworkers are listening to you right now. Too.
I mean, I love having a job and I love my job, but working all day is no joke.
I mean, and you're part of Broadway's return because everyone who listens knows you work at a Broadway ad agency. So
yeah, so it's like so exciting, but also like, what's the tea on being like, you wake up in the morning and then you have to like work all day and then you get home at night and you have very few hours, then you have to go to bed and do it over again. Like, what kind of capitalist nonsense did I buy into when I was born in America?
I know.
Although I feel lucky to be in this country.
We know what you mean.
I know. Dylan, I have to tell you, I've been watching the same episode of The Bachelor in Paradise for 5 nights.
Well, that's the thing, because you don't have all day to binge anymore.
I know.
So now it's like you're probably behind on all of your shows. And I know you keep a tight calendar.
I keep a tight calendar. I'm really stressed because I'm like 5 weeks behind on Ted Lasso. And I did come out this summer as a Ted Lasso stan, and it was really big. It was almost as big as when I came out as gay, but... Dylan, I know you famously left Bachelor Nation.
I did. I was Leah Remini escaping Scientology, but I left Bachelor Nation.
You did not say you were Leah Remini leaving Scientology.
I was, and I feel so much like better, but I still have, you know, there's still like reverberations every now and then. For example, I was watching the other two, you know, the other two starring friend of the pod, Helena York, and Derek Pleth or whatever from JoJo season played a cameo role in one of the episodes.
What?
Remember Hot Derek? He dated the girl who was emotionally intelligent.
Yes, Taylor.
On Paradise.
And remember that one scene? Yeah. They were like dating and they had an odd vibe, but all of a sudden, out of the blue, there were, do you know what I'm going to say to you? This scene is like many summers ago. So no one but me remembers this. They're just sitting on the cabana. You know, it's evening time. So it's the night vision camera too.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden he just grumbles, "Fuck you." Do you remember that?
Oh my gosh. No.
It was the most bizarre thing I've ever seen in my life. But they're not together anymore.
No, because you have to watch the episode of the other two.
Okay, there. But on this new Bachelor in Paradise, they had, I think, 300 contestants enter the beach on the first night, including David Spade, who's not a contestant, but gave like really wry humor. And remember Brendan, the really, really cute, dark hair, blue eyes?
Brendan Moraes. There's like a few every season that I would like follow and then eventually unfollow on Insta.
Yeah. He was on Claire/Tayshia's season, and he's the villain of this season.
Oh, I hate that.
And he's like a full-on modern-day reality star villain. The Bachelor has really crossed a threshold because he's like on camera. Basically, he started dating a girl before.
Classic.
And they both knew they were going to paradise. And then when he got to the beach on day one, he pretended that he was single and was just kind of like singing out, but he wouldn't like kiss the other girl that he was dating, this amazing woman named Natasha. And he gaslit her for like 4 episodes. And then Piper from Matt James's season joined, and the rumors were all on the beach. They were like, Piper and Brendan are already dating. Piper and Brendan are already dating. And then she showed up on the beach and took Brendan on a one-on-one, and everyone was like freaking out. They're like, oh, we knew it. And then on the one-on-one, Brendan was acting shady as hell, and Piper goes, I don't know why you're pretending like you've never seen me before, because we both agreed we were going to come into this and start dating. And then like he was caught on camera saying to her, dude, it doesn't even matter, like, we're going to get followers before the show even airs. It was crazy. I realize I hate this show now, because for better or worse.
But it's fun. I love when you update me.
I know, but for better or worse, social media has changed reality TV, and now contestants know there's more to it than just the plot of the show. And it's just really hard to find people to do reality shows that aren't aware of everything they're going to gain from it outside of like actually wanting love or actually wanting to be America's next drag superstar.
I think both things can be true. I think both things can be true. And I will say, are you saying that they're not there for the right reasons?
No, and everyone was using that line. They were like, he's not here for the right reasons. He's not here for the reasons.
Oh, it's all too classic. Listen, our guest seems very engaged in this conversation, which leads me to believe perhaps they were or are a part of Bachelor Nation. I don't want to out them, much like you were outed, Connor, but I think we need to bring her in because I'm living for her reaction.
Yes, it's time. Our guest today is The Moment, best known for her Outer Critics Circle Awards nominated role as Katie Heron in Mean Girls the Musical on Broadway, for which she also starred in the world premiere production in Washington, D.C. During her time as Katie, our guest won the Broadway.com Audience Choice Award for Favorite Breakthrough Performance and the coveted Star of the Year Award. That's a gag, honey. Say no more. She made history as the youngest person to play Fantine full-time on Broadway in Les Mis. She's also been seen as Kim Ravenel in PBS's Live from Lincoln Center Showboat and Beth in Signature Theater's world premiere of Kathleen Marshall and Sheryl Crow's musical Diner. She was featured opposite Tyne Daly in York Theatre Company's Dear World, as well as starred as Nellie Forbush in South Pacific and Sophie in Mamma Mia at PCLO. She has appeared on Saturday Night Live, The Today Show, Late Night with Seth Meyers, the Tony Awards, and as Young Gloria in Girls 5 Eva. She's an activist, philanthropist, and recently engaged to Broadway's Erin Samuels. You can see her live on September 19th at 8 p.m. I'm giving you the exact time here, everyone, in a brand new solo show at Chelsea Table and Stage. Please welcome to drama, Erica Henningsen.
Hi. I was having so many reactions to the Bachelor chat. I'm so happy about that.
I'm sorry that we didn't bring you in sooner because I was like, oh, she has more to say than me. So she should co-host this segment.
Well, no, I famously left Bachelor Nation 2 and I actually left it a while ago. So I do understand that. So it is
You're really safe here.
Exactly. It's fun to hear what's going on. I stopped watching. I mean, this feels like ages ago, but it really feels like just yesterday. I stopped watching after JoJo season.
Which Connor and I famously were in an episode of that season.
No, you're kidding me. Are you serious?
Well, we were like at a post-date surprise Dan and Shay concert.
Stop it. Wait, I have always wondered about those because I'm like, Who books the acts for the end date musical moment?
I don't know. We found out about it through Dan and Shay's social media because I oddly loved them and still do actually. And they like, we're like Dan and Shay fans come to a free concert / taping of The Bachelorette. And we were in Columbus at Ohio State at the time. And so, which I know rivals right here.
And, I know. Enemies.
And so it was just in like Pittsburgh area. So we just drove with two of our besties, Mary and Allison. And we went and we were in the audience while they filmed the entrance like two or three times. And
it was crazy. It was like basically JoJo and her date who was, this guy
called Luke.
He was like a former vet or something.
I remember Luke.
Basically, Dan and Shay performed two songs two times each, and they filmed JoJo and Luke entering twice. And then they like danced and did this whole thing just twice.
I think they kissed. I think they kissed too, which the crowd went wild.
They fully made out. Why did you decide to leave Bachelor Nation?
Well, okay. It's because I watched this Lifetime series that I was like obsessed with called Unreal.
Yes.
I don't know if it came out then, but I just watched it after that. And I'm sure some of that, you know, scripted series was heightened because good television.
Sure.
But enough of it kind of rang true for me. And I like researched the writer who was obviously a producer or a line producer on The Bachelor. And I just thought, okay, now I know too much. Now I was not there for the right reasons anymore. I wasn't there to watch them fall in love. I was there to watch like the cracks and the manipulation in the foundation. Whereas before I like truly believed we are here for love.
Oh, right. Right.
You're a romantic at heart.
I really was. And then Unreal, great series, but it ruined it for me.
I know. And Unreal, that was great cast too.
Oh,
I remember,
God.
And it lasted a couple seasons.
It was so good.
They did a Black Bachelor before the real show actually did. So,
yeah, it was amazing. Also, like Danae Benton was on it and was stellar. She was
Season, right?
She was in the first season, I think. And she just, I think she was, her plot line was like, they were going to be like, you're going to be sort of like the black contestant. And she basically said, okay, I'm going to rewrite the story that you're trying to write. And she left the show. So I was bummed because I wanted more Danae Benton in it, but I really liked her plot line because I thought that's the way to do it.
I love the actress who plays like the main like producer. I don't remember
Sheree
her name.
Appleby or yes. Constance Zimmer?
Constance Zimmer. Constance Zimmer.
Erica's like, okay, I have IMDb memorized in my head.
Constance Zimmer, and then she won like some award for playing it.
Because she was amazing. It was so, it was kind of the first time where I, you know, it was really one of the first things I had binged in a while, maybe because I came to it late, but it was also one of those shows where I was like, why didn't I know who either of these actresses are? I knew they were not unknowns because they had been around for a while, but it was that moment that clicked in for me that like, oh, you can work in this industry for years and years and not be a household name and mm-hmm. still be that freaking good as those two actresses were.
Wow, that's so true.
Yeah, it really was. That was when I thought, oh, okay. You know, nobody, I know these people by name and face. I would stop them in an airport, but I don't know if anybody else would, but I just thought they were so brilliant in it.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of when Carmen Cusack made her Broadway debut in Bright Star,
yes.
which we were talking about her off pod earlier, but how she was in every single tour. She did South Pacific, she did Wicked, she did Phantom, Les Mis, like yep. everything, Another Fantine, I believe. And everyone was like, this is her like splashy debut. Like, where has she been? It's like, she's been all over the place.
She's been, she has mm-hmm. been. And like now you're noticing, I know I love those stories. Cause I just also think it, especially as somebody who, it just reminds me like, it's such a marathon. It's so not a sprint. Mm-hmm.
I know, that's so true. I mean, mm-hmm. not everyone, you know, gets a Tony Award nomination in their first debut. Although you should have for your breakthrough role in Mean Girls.
You're so kind.
I was sad that morning.
I was, you know, it's very interesting. I was a little sad. I was really bummed because it was one of those things where I think I had kind of prepared myself for that because I just thought, you know, I'm brand new, haven't been around the block really. I knew the role was not, you know, even though I was proud of what I did with it, I just kind of thought like, I don't know if this is the thing that is going to grab people's attention.
Not as flashy.
So I really prepared myself for that. And actually the first person to call me that day was Carrie Butler. And Carrie Butler, I believe she was talking about Hairspray, but she said, you know, she was in Hairspray and everybody said, oh my God, you're amazing. Because duh, she was amazing in it. And everybody's yeah. like, oh, you're going to get nominated. And then she said it was so disappointing when she didn't, but it changed her perspective on everything. And she's like, and it's why I've stuck around for so long. And like, I feel like I don't let Carrie Butler know enough how much that phone call meant to me because I was able to go to work with my castmates and be like, it's okay. I'm fine. Mm-hmm. Like everything is okay. But it was really because she kind of broke through any sort of negative self-talk that could have really unraveled for that day and yeah. the rest of the beginning of the run. So she was really great.
That's so beautiful. It's well documented on this podcast. I'm a Carrie Butler stan. Catch Me If You Can is like my favorite musical, and her Brenda track in that song Fly Fly Away is just everything.
The best.
And, really, you know, I think that I remember her giving an interview about, she said she felt like she let the team down that year because everyone else, like, with the exception of Matt Morrison, was also nominated in Hairspray. And she was like, maybe like one of the only ones. So I can only imagine, especially in Mean Girls, I think we thought a lot more of you were going to get nominated. So it's like, yeah. I'm sure there was weirdness of like, oh, a few of us did and a few didn't.
It was weird. It was like they kind of had one spot for each twosome, mm-hmm. almost, you know, is like we had one spot for the plastics and then the leading ladies and then one spot for like the art freaks. So it was kind of interesting. Yeah. It was really like, I think it was almost in a beautiful way. I think it was exactly what needed to happen because it was like, it wasn't just all the attention on one person. It kind of allowed the show, because the show was an ensemble cast, even though I was at the center of it, it really was an ensemble leading cast. And because three very different people were nominated, it was kind of this thing where it was like, right, well, Ashley Park's performance isn't flawless without Kate Rockwell's. Regina George can't be what she is if I'm not there to sort of support that alpha female. And then yeah. Gray Henson is not hysterical unless he has Barrett Weed next to him being sort of like the dry punchline next to his tap dancing
extra
gay best friend. So that was what was really interesting about it. It did, in this beautiful way, if it hadn't been those three and like those three categories, it might have turned awkward or weird, and it kind of just became like a celebration of the ensemble cast, it felt like.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Sorry. We're already getting into like Tony nominations drama. I guess Tony's a bit on my mind because we're getting Tony Awards at the end of the month.
I know. What?
You know, which is like, is anyone like, remember that? It's so random.
Michaela Diamond and I are throwing a dinner party that night and we kind of forgot and we felt really bad because we were like, oh my God, shoot. People are going to like want to watch the Tonys. And I think we're still going to watch it, but we just felt bad. We were like, oh my God, we're not trying to like do something in opposition to the Tonys. We just always think of it as being in June.
Right, right. It's so random.
I love that you and Michaela Diamond are pals.
She's one of my besties. She's wonderful. Yeah.
Oh my God. I love her. She was phenomenal in the Cher show.
Like, stop it. Not fair. Mm-hmm. Literally, she sang and the beat goes on. And I was like, what the f-? I can't
run it. That was like one of my favorite numbers best in the moment. Whole show. When she would do that kick every time she'd cross the stage.
So good. It, like the la-di-da-di-di at the end. I was just like, what is this like creature on stage? So good.
Were they across from you guys?
They were. That's how we became friends. They were across from us. What happened? I don't know why we became good friends. Cause I think we went to the opening because we were good friends with Michael Campaigno, who was in it. And I think I just kind of saw her and thought, okay, that person is unreal. I want to be in that person's orbit. And I think it was probably just over like dig in meals that we got in between shows. Cause we'd be in line.
Love.
It's now called Dig, famously renamed Dig.
I did not know they rebranded.
Drop the and to stick with Dig.
This is like when Vanessa Ann Hudgens became Vanessa Hudgens, and I still call her Vanessa Ann.
Vanessa Ann. And it's also like of all the things I needed to rebrand after these 18 months, was it Dig In? And why is INN wrong? Like, it was just such an odd statement for them to make. I was like, nobody needed this.
Is it still there? Right, Brian? 50,
yeah, it's still there.
First and second or
it's
whatever?
Still there. Okay. I went in and it was like...
Maybe people thought it was a hotel.
Oh my God.
Dig In. You know what I mean?
That has to be what it is. Because I'm just like, why would they get rid? Also, Dig, I don't know if that's the greatest... It just sounds like cheap. Mm-mm. They were just like, we don't want to like buy new letters, so we'll just get rid of some old ones.
Right. That was like my, I'm treating myself middle of the week. Because I worked at 54th, so it was right like there. Right around the corner on my lunch hour.
Oh, it's so good.
I would see you Mean Girls kids coming up and down. I'd see a lot of people going to that Chipotle.
Oh, yeah. I can add to the Chipotle.
I'd see Kyle with like a bag of Chipotle, and I'd think, oh, he's got it for Erica too. Like, that's what I would think.
Kyle loved Chipotle. No, I cannot eat Chipotle before the show. Not good for the tummy.
No.
Never. Well, because you were on stage the whole time. Did you even eat before? Or did you just wait every night?
I think I need to do like a whole podcast just about like what I had to eat during like the eating diaries of Mean Girls, because I like panicked. There was like 6 months where I panicked. I was like, my body can't process food, because I just like had a nightmare of like having to like run off stage. And then it stuck in my head. Oh. So Dig In was truly like one of the few. My order was so boring. I just went back to Dig In and got like the mac and cheese and the meatballs. But like back in the day of Mean Girls, it was salmon and sweet potatoes and brown rice. It was like what you give a dog if they like are incontinent. Or is that the word?
Huh? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Wait.
I do.
You have a dog now.
Oh, she's right behind me.
I want to see her. She's so cute.
I see her on Instagram, but.
And you rescued her. Oh, I see her. Oh, she can never be too far.
Is she attached to you?
I know. It looks like she blends in with the couch. She is attached to me. She is. It's funny. We have a very, like, she and I have a really sweet relationship that when, like, Kyle's gone, I realize that she is my dog, but she just, like, loves boys. So sometimes when Kyle, you know, sometimes I feel a little neglected by her. And then as soon as he's gone, I realize, like, no, I'm her OG.
She sounds like Connor, honestly.
I was just going to say, I relate to her. I'm like, I love my girls, but when boys are around... They don't have a chance.
We are just kind of curious about your present state of being, Erica. We'd like to ask all of our guests, are you well?
Am I?
My favorite response always.
I am enjoying the process of accepting being a bit unwell. I think that's the thing. I have to say, I am well in the sense, like, I have, you know, on a day-to-day basis, I just feel very, like, fortunate. Still, I think about so many people who got really broken by this pandemic in our industry. And I think everybody did in some way, but luckily for me, it did not mean like I still had my apartment and Kyle and I's relationship. Like, we got engaged. So, you know, there was a lot of beautiful stuff that came out of this, and then sort of just personal stuff on my own end. But I think this time I feel like a bit of whiplash, because I'm like, I am so grateful for things to be up and running again. But I also feel this little ticker inside me going, you need to be XYZ. You need to be everywhere now because everything is back. And I don't right. think that's, I think we figured out that that was not true after this year and a half off. And I'm trying to continue to just trust the timing.
Wait, Kyle is so freaking cute. The fact that you guys are together, like, it's the most envious couple ever. I mean, it's so cute that you had this little showmance that turned into a forever.
I know. It's crazy.
And of course, yeah, I was admiring your ring earlier, but when did you guys get engaged?
We got engaged mid-June, like June 16th, I think. I should know that. We were away. We were like on vacation. So what is time when you're on vacation?
Right, right.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I had had some showmances that had gone awry in the past. Oof. So Kyle was like the one, especially because I knew Mean Girls was hopefully going to be this big deal. I was like, no, 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 we are not going to go there. Like it always goes poorly. And I don't know why it wasn't like he was aggressive or persistent. He was just like, I think we can trust that we take this show and our work seriously enough. And we respect one another enough because we had already been working together for, you know, a couple months at that point. So it wasn't like we were strangers and we were just, you know, castmates for a while. And I think I'm happy we did. Cause I'm like, that was the showmance that was supposed to work out. Thank God I didn't nip it in the bud before it had a chance.
So you weren't dating in DC?
No, we started dating. We got through the out of town tryout. And then we had our first date on our first like official date. Like Gray Henson will say, you guys hung out, but it was like under the guise of walking to tech together, you know, or walking to previews together in DC. But we had like our first date where we like sat down, just the two of us, not with any other cast members, on December 6th.
Oh,
oh my God.
Wait, so who made the first move? I'm like all of a sudden like blushing and giddy, like thinking about this. It's so cute.
Who made the first move? Oh God. I guess he would say that I did.
Well, we love to see it.
No, it's funny. It's like we both have, what's interesting is we both have different moments where we both were kind of like, oh, that person is flirting with me. And so that's the weird thing. It's like in his mind, my first move was not my first move. Cause I was like, oh, I didn't think that was first flirtatious. And his first move, he said, oh no, that was just, so I think we're kind of in disagreement of who started it, but we just got, I mean, we got along so well when we started working together. And then obviously the show in DC, it was really, you know, it's just stressful putting up a new show. We were in previews and we got so many changes all the time. So I think we had a conversation where we were like, why don't we just get through this? And then let's go on a date when like nobody's watching us, like separate from the cast when we're back in New York. And we can kind of, we also had like 2 months before we started rehearsal. So we were like, let's see how it goes. And if it goes badly, we can like nip it in the bud before rehearsals start for the Broadway production. So that was our
right. That's very mature.
Very mature. And that's the thing. I was like, that's why it worked professional. Out. Very professional. Jeff Richmond famously did not know we were dating until like a year and a half into the Broadway run.
Oh my God.
I thought the chemistry was just so good.
I was like, or it was so bad that he was like, there's no way those people can be attracted to one another.
Wait, is it like so weird being in a show with your significant other and being like, ooh, maybe I wouldn't do that acting choice, but I guess they made that choice tonight.
Oh my God, that's so funny. It's weird. You don't process, at least we didn't. I did not process Kyle on stage. I think we were playing such, like, we brought a lot of ourselves to those characters, but like, you know, I never got like, don't repeat this to him. Well, you can. I was like, I never got butterflies watching Kyle be Aaron Samuels.
Oh, gotcha.
Those sweaters that you wear are truly heinous. Like, I would not.
You mean not when he pushed his hair back?
Yeah, I guess that. I there were like a couple moments, but like the moments when he was off stage and we would like, those were those moments. It was the on stage stuff was kind of like, I mean, I was playing like such a sweet dweeb for the first act. Like, you know, I don't think he got any, maybe he did. But yeah, it is funny. I think sometimes he would watch. He was pretty consistent. I would get a little bored and make very odd choices. And yeah. He would give me eyes that was like, ma'am, what track are you on tonight? Like, what are you doing?
Oh my God, I love it. Well, I just have to say, when Connor and I saw Mean Girls, it was actually the day after the Tony nominations that May. We did like the, because you could only rush on Wednesdays. Yeah. And, we were hustling to make that coin. So we had to do the rush. And my boyfriend and Connor camped out overnight to do, like, they literally got there at like, what, Connor, what time? Three in the morning.
What?
Erica, it was an insane, I've never done it since. But you know what? It was so worth it. I loved
it. Wow.
And the price was right for the ticket.
Price is right. Price is right for the ticket. Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate. I'm glad. I was like, oh God, I hope it was worth the wait.
Love. That reminds me of what I was going to say is you were a supernova in that show. Like, you know, it's obviously an iconic role. But what I loved about the musical adaptation is that it was like a twist on like what we were expecting. And everyone was, you weren't doing an imitation. And we talked to Taylor Lautterman about this when we had her on the pod back in January. Like, it wasn't like an imitation. It was like a new, you originated the role on Broadway. And that was so, you did a beautiful job.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's such a good point. You really did. I remember when Orfe was in Legally Blonde and I remember hearing about, you know, everyone else who went in for Paulette was doing a Jennifer Coolidge impression. And she went in and she did, well, she really did Orfe, but she did her own take on the character.
Orfe is Orfe.
And I love that.
Yeah.
Orfe is Orfe. Right. But that's kind of what you have to do when it's an iconic work, you know, because otherwise why would you
exactly.
go see it? You know what I mean?
Just exactly. And I think that's why like the shows that, you know, there's so many movie musicals these days. And I think the ones that hit the best are the ones that don't try and just like recreate the iconic performances or iconic moments. Like, I thought it was so smart the way the writers did it. They talked about how, you know, they said like, we're not going to have a song called That's So Fetch. We're not going to have a song like Trang Pak's in the auditorium with, you know, all those lines that we love. They were like, some of those might be in there, but the musicalized moments can't be the buzzwords because how do you build a song on that?
Right.
And the same went for the characters. I think we all pulled like a couple things, but certainly for the Lindsay Lohan character, for Katie, like, it doesn't, what she accomplished on screen would get so fully lost in a massive comedy musical, which is why my Katie was like a bit more on the balls of her feet is the way I'll use that.
Definitely.
Did Lindsay ever come see it?
No, she was supposed to, or at least I don't know if she was supposed to, but, or if this was like a publicity thing. She was in town promoting her nightclub in Mykonos. Is that how you pronounce that?
I remember that. That was a moment.
And she was supposed to come and it leaked that she was coming. So they canceled.
I actually remember reading that. Didn't she say she wasn't invited to opening or there was like maybe drama that she was banned from opening or something. When in reality, that was not the story.
Not the story. I don't even think they would have wanted to come to opening. Like, I don't think it was even on the radar of the producers of like, we should get the movie cast here. Cause I think they just thought all these people have moved on. It had been 16 years. Cause it came out in 2002.
Yeah.
I think
that's right. The only person I could see who really would have wanted to be there would be Jonathan, and his last name is escaping me right now, who was Aaron Samuels.
And he did come eventually.
Yeah, of course. That's like his thing is like, be everywhere, do everything. Like, if there's a camera, he's nearby.
He's going to be back. Yeah.
Wait, okay. So looking back on your Mean Girls experience, which I'm sure still feels very much like what people really want to talk to you about, because you left and then the pandemic happened and things in many ways froze. So in some ways, I wonder, has it been hard to move on from Mean Girls for that reason?
I'm so happy you asked that. Well, you both understand because you work in this industry. So you get that, like, when you leave the show, so many things happen after that, but just none of them are publicized. It's like the things that have happened for almost 2 years now in my life. Like, one thing was publicized because it was related to my personal life, or one thing was like common knowledge, but there's all these little things that have happened after. And yet for many people who love Mean Girls, I'm still Katie Heron, because Sabrina Carpenter, who was about to take over, really only got to do one or two shows. And so, yeah, it has been hard because I feel very grateful to it, but kind of ready to leave it behind. And in a weird way, I feel torn, because the thing I love the most about Mean Girls was getting to sort of set an example for the younger generation, and or like a young generation. I just mean like the teens who loved the show and the young adults who loved the show. And it's tough because I still feel such like an allegiance to them and such a pull, but I'm also aware that, you know, I'm not part of that thing anymore. And so I'm trying to figure out like, how do I maintain sort of a role model-esque version of myself that is not steeped in Mean Girls. Cause it really is the thing that I took away from Mean Girls, was that like with great power or with great press comes great responsibility. But that was all tied to Mean Girls. So I don't quite know how to thread that needle right now. And it's why I like disappeared for a while. And, you know, I'm sort of trying to figure out like, how do I harness this thing that I was given, but do so in a way that leads it away from Mean Girls and towards something else. Yeah. And I will say, like, in terms of my personal life, it's the one thing Kyle and I worry about is that like, we are always going to be Katie and Aaron to some people. And I think that's why we're like so itching to, you know, we like working together, but we are trying to actively pursue like separate projects and separate concerts and things like that, so that we have these identities that are not intrinsically linked to the show we met on.
That's yes. Delicate balance. I really appreciate you sharing that. I can only imagine it's like an identity, I don't want to say crisis, but like struggle.
It is. It's weird. And it's like, it's a hard thing because you don't want to, I would never be ungrateful for that, but it's almost been prolonged in a way that I don't think any of us expected because of the pandemic. And now that the show has closed, you know, like everybody has their favorite Elphaba. I don't know if in the way that like Idina Menzel was able to move on from it, because we had Shoshana Bean and then we had like Christine Dwyer and we had all these people that we loved. And in terms of Broadway's Mean Girls, like it was the OG cast. I think like that is a gift. And it is maybe also sort of the thing that will follow us for posterity.
That's so interesting. And I forgot that Sabrina Carpenter was going in, and I'm suddenly wondering if her and Joshua Bassett were together at the time. But anyways, that was even real. I don't even know.
Wait. No, they weren't.
They weren't.
They weren't, because I met, I don't think this is personal information, but she was with somebody else when she started Mean Girls.
Okay.
And then I think it maybe ended as she was about to start, just because she was like moving to New York and it was like so much is changing. And
yeah,
that's when a lot of relationships. Yeah, there we go. So well, you heard it here. She was not with Joshua Bassett.
Drama.
If she is now, I have no idea.
Yeah. Wait, really quick before we move on to other things. I'm curious, did you see the proposal from Kyle coming?
No, literally now. We'd obviously talked about it. It wasn't like, what? We have not discussed marriage. We had definitely talked about it after this difficult year of quarantine and self-taping with one another and getting a dog and like so many things that could have broken us just made us stronger. But no, I did not see the proposal coming, because we'd been traveling for 2.5 weeks together at that point, and we'd been kind of like living out of the same suitcase. And I'm like, you know, I'm a little sibling, so I'm just like in people's stuff all the time. It's like his toiletry bag was my toiletry bag. So he was not, if he was hiding something, I had no idea. He had been like carrying the ring around in his suitcase, and he was not acting weird. We had been around my family, and he never was like, I'm going to go talk to your parents now without you around. So he just did everything in a way like, I think he needs to be a spy, because I'm a pretty nosy person and I had no clue.
Wow.
And so it was really like, nobody tells you this when you actually, I did talk to Danae Benton about this recently, because I was talking to her about, she got engaged, or she married our friend Carl. And I was like, what happened when you got proposed? She goes, oh, my brain just short circuited. And I was like, okay, great. So that happened to me too. Like the planner person in the relationship, when somebody plans something without your awareness, you're like, wait a second. Okay, this is okay. Yeah, let's do this.
Yes, that resonates with me in my relationship. Anytime my boyfriend Hunter tries to like surprise me with something, I'm always like, okay. And then I black out. Fully.
You feel bad. You're like, wait, no, this is a good thing. I'm just like, I didn't plan it. So I'm just like getting on board.
Right. Well, I've said to him before, I'm like, when the time's coming, like I need to make sure I'm like dressed in my eleganza. Like I need to make sure that like there will be photos.
I was not,
you know,
in my eleganza. Is that why you asked, Connor? Because you were like, you look like a train wreck in those photos.
No. I guess I just always wonder, because like if I choose to go down the path of potentially getting married one day, I wonder if I'd want to have a heads up in some way. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. There's so few surprises in life.
Yeah, there are so few surprises in life. I knew that I didn't want it like filmed or anything, you know, but not because I don't like when other people do that, but Kyle and I have said this, like, we're performers. So like, we know when the camera's around, and I was like, I don't want this private moment. I don't want to be self-aware, you know, because I don't want to like question how I'm reacting or like, what should I be doing? And so I kind of, and also, we've had good friends get engaged who said, you know, take that day for yourself, because then pretty soon everybody's coming in with, you should do this, you should do that. And, you know, we were totally by ourselves. We were in Hawaii and we got to like celebrate it. Really, we didn't tell anybody except our parents for like 72 hours. And then we called some friends.
Wow. Oh, that's so exciting. I love it. Well, congrats to you both. I'm realizing that we've like jumped all the way ahead to like these huge recent moments, but we do like to take it back to the beginning in many ways with something that we call the Ring of Keys moment.
Yes. That moment of recognition when you realized that you wanted something out of this business we call show, or perhaps just pop culture, the performing arts in general. Do you feel like you had that moment?
I do. Gosh, it's weird because I'm like, well, which one was it? I have so many little ones. You know, I think what it happened was I had just done a lot of children's theater. So I was always with people who were my age and it kind of felt like a hobby. But obviously it was the hobby that I loved the most. You know, yeah. I played so many sports and didn't really excel at any of them. So like I enjoyed doing theater the most. But our high school, when I was in middle school, like sixth grade, our high school did a production of Les Mis and they needed a girl to play Little Cosette. And I got to do it. And even though, I mean, when you're in sixth grade, high schoolers feel like big adults to you. And though they were just like, I don't know, it was like the high school quarterback playing Jean Valjean, like, and he was fine, but something about feeling like part of a team for the first time. And I was like, oh, these people take it seriously, because there were those, you know, I turned into one of them, those high school people who really took the spring musical quite seriously. And it was kind of the first time where I realized, oh, there's another, this is a thing people do. This is a thing that you do, not just at summer camps or in like summer workshops your mom signs you up for. And of course it's Les Mis, so it's epic, even though famously I said, I think it's going to be boring when I first listened to the music. I didn't get how epic it was. Like, it's too much for a 10-year-old to take in.
Sure, sure.
But I think that was sort of like a big bite of the stage bug that I recall.
Oh, that's so cool. Do you remember any of like this, the high school kids, like kind of like taking you in and like,
oh my God,
helping you out, or did you feel kind of alone?
Yeah, no, I remember specifically, Caitlin O'Brien, fierce, great mix. She played Eponine, Queen. Like, she was so good. And she was the girl who took it. Like, she was the girl who was like, oh, that girl's going to be a star. And it was kind of like, watching her and the way, you know, the people who didn't take it so seriously and were like, oh, I'm just doing this for an after school activity, watching the way that they sort of respected her, as opposed to, you know, I feel like in sixth grade, taking something seriously, you're at that phase where it's kind of like, it's not cool. Like, it's not cool to care about something once you enter sixth grade or seventh grade, eighth grade. And watching this young woman who really cared about something and was A, so good at it, and B, people in high school like kind of respected her because they were like, she's on a path. I just thought, oh, okay. Like, I care about this. I want to care about this the way she cares about it. Mm. I never told her that. I should tell her that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure she's a regular listener.
Erica,
so
she's actually, she's in the Zoom waiting room and we actually brought her in today to surprise you.
Come on in.
Well, so then you're in Les Mis and then that's where you make your Broadway debut.
Yeah. Les Mis has spooky vibes because it was also the last show I played Fantine. The last show I did in college was Les Mis and I played Fantine. So yeah, the last performance I did at University of Michigan was Fantine and Les Mis. And the person who cast me in that was Alex Gemignani. He was supposed to direct it at school. And when I got the appointment for the Broadway production, I called him because I was like, I think they meant to send me in for Cosette. And he was like, no, go in for Fantine. Like, they didn't make a mistake. Like, I cast you in that. They could very well cast you in that too. It's not because you were just in college and happened to be good. Like, you can play that part. So that became my Broadway debut.
Oh my God. How cool. And you're like, what, 22, 23?
Yeah, 23. And then I turned 24 over the course of my time with it.
Oh, how fun. We saw that revival, but I think we saw it like the first summer. So I don't think you were in it yet.
Not yet. You probably saw Casey, who got to shadow, and like, I don't, it's just Casey. She is also somebody who has like a weird orb in my life because she was the person I replaced. And then when I was going in for Frozen, which I wanted so badly, I got to like have like a final callback with her on stage where it's like, she was in like this Elsa dress and I was in like, you know, our own sort of like audition versions of those costumes. And I remember looking at her and being like, you know, it wasn't the show that was meant to be for me, but it was this really special moment with Casey. Cause I was like, I already looked up to you so much because of Les Mis. And now I get to do this thing with you here.
Oh, that's so cool. So you were in for Anna.
Yes. Yeah.
I could see it. I could see it at some point, Erica, I will say.
I hope, you know, it's one of those things where I'm like, I love that show so much and I'm so happy everything worked out. And I think everybody, it's like, that's the main thing that I keep reminding myself is we all kind of twiddle our thumbs. I'm like, the path is not always clear, but where I have ended up each time I've not gotten something has always been the right place for me.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, I was like, I would never have met Kyle if I did Frozen. I would never have made like my best friend. Like Gray is one of my best friends. So it's just, you know, there's so many things that came out of that show.
That's
beyond
awesome.
The role itself.
Now, not to like dig up bad feelings, but were there any other shows you got so close to the end of the audition process that you were like, you really wanted?
Yes. Well, it's funny. I thought I was close. Who knows? They could have been like the final audition and then held auditions for like 3 months later. No, but I do remember. Okay. But this is why I'm like, I think I sometimes have like a sixth sense because I was really close in Anastasia, or I thought I was close. It was like, I thought I was pretty close. And I remember coming out of, I like had just sung In My Dreams and I came out and I saw Christy Altomare sitting in the waiting room. And I literally went, oh, I don't mean this in a negative way. I was like, oh, I thought my brain went, oh, I thought they didn't know about you. Because in my head, I was like, I saw her and I was like, immediately, I was like, that's exactly who should be playing this part. And when I saw her there, because I think it was her first audition, I was like, why haven't you been here from the beginning? Did a message just not get passed to your agents? Did something happen? Like, how did they not know that you were supposed to be here from the beginning?
That's cool.
And she tells that story.
Does she remember seeing you?
I don't know. Because I swear I walked out and saw her and I was like, I'm not getting this part. Like, I remember it so viscerally. And I've never told her that either. But like, I just remember walking out and being like, you're the girl. Like, of course you're the girl. Like, and I've never felt it so clearly. Never felt it so clearly. Like,
I think a sixth sense is cool to have, especially in this industry. Like, I'm sure you get feelings about things every now and then too, just with the way things are going, you because you've had such cool experiences that you maybe know like what to anticipate.
I think so. And I think when it feels like I'm pushing for something, I need to start trusting. And I'm like, I don't know, Patti LuPone has like a quote in her book where she kind of, granted, she doesn't have to audition anymore, but she kind of says, she's like, I don't try and force things. Like, I go where I'm wanted. And I think that is so like where, when I have been wanted or when I have felt like I'm not having to force myself into a hole when I'm square. Like those are the things that work.
Oh my God. I need you to be Bobby and Company. Wouldn't that
would be my dream?
Oh, you're a little young, but that's okay. Young, but
5 years. Yeah.
I see it.
I need it so badly. I'm like, 5 years. I'm about to turn 30. Oh, I turned 29. I have like a very youthful energy, but I feel like Bobby can, because it's almost like she refuses to grow up. No way.
Definitely.
Not that like marriage or companionship is like the mark of a grown-up.
But in that show, a lot of the characters view it that way. So I think that's...
Exactly. It's through their lens. Mm-hmm. I know. Hopefully they'll do like some gorgeous like Chicago lyric opera production that I get to be in one day.
Yes. I love that. I'm like, you've thought about this.
I manifest all this stuff. I was like, I'm still waiting. Kelly O'Hara is never going to age. I'm still waiting to play Clara to her, what's the mom's name in Light in the Piazza.
I always think it's just Victoria because of Victoria Clark.
It's just Victoria Clark. I can't wait for her to play Victoria Clark, but she doesn't look old enough. She'll never look old enough.
No, she never will. She never will.
We look like I would, could be her younger sister, not her daughter. So
yeah, literally.
Well, Erica, I'll tell you, it was such a treat to see you in Girls 5 Heva, like to mention like other things and going where you're wanted. Yeah. That just felt perfect for you. And I think I could see a little bit more film and TV in your future.
Oh my gosh. From your lips, like whoever the fates that be that control that world. I hope so.
Yeah. I think that, especially because we're getting so many musical shows and music things are coming back in.
Yeah.
On what's the right word? Back on trend, I guess.
In Vogue.
I don't know. In Vogue. There we go.
In Vogue.
Yeah. They're very in Vogue.
Yeah, they are. And it is a weird thing. It's like Ashley Park said this to me because she sings a lot in this new season of Emily in Paris.
Spoiler. Oh, cool. And she sang a little bit in the first season.
And she sang a little bit in the first season. And she said, you know, at first she was like, no, I don't want to do that. That's like, I'm trying to like be this other thing. And then was like, wait, but that's the thing I was literally put on this earth to do. Why should I not do it also in this medium? And I thought that was really hearing her say it, because obviously she's a friend, but also, you know, I admire sort of how she's moved through this industry. And I just thought, oh, that's true. Like, why would you hide this thing that you can do really well just because you're like, now I'm doing TV. So I hide, you know, I will not sing on TV if they ask me to.
Yeah.
Our generation is realizing we can actually do it all. You can do everything you want to do, you know?
Yes.
And,
yes.
And Gen Z is like, what? I sometimes refuse to do the things I don't want to do. Like, they're so cool. You know what I mean? Like,
they make me feel like I know nothing and could also accomplish anything at the same time. Like, I don't quite understand that generation because they lead with such fearlessness and also such like, no, I'm not, like, they don't do the bullshit that I feel like if you are a millennial mm-hmm. child, you're like, well, I have to play the game. And like, I'm yep. not going to like really ask for what I need because I want to be like easy to work with. And while I do still find value in being, you know, a kind person and a relatively like team player, I do admire sometimes the way Gen Z is just like, no, I need to do this my way.
Yeah,
definitely. Because that's what we were told, you know, like we're around your age. So like, we get it. Okay, wait, yeah. We are kind of coming to the end, but I do have another question. I need to know about Diner because I feel like that was supposed to come in. Was it just because Diner was happening and Waitress was happening? Like, what was going on?
It happened. Just a little tidbit. I don't know if we're going to pull it off. We are trying to bring some of that music to New York City. Just good. Like, I'm putting a little teaser here. I have no idea what it's going to be, but
I mean, it's Sheryl Crow.
Sheryl Crow wrote literally like love to Sarah Bareilles. Sheryl Crow wrote like an amazing pop musical theater score, like unreal.
That's what so I heard.
Good. Like, so many people have touched that show, like Jeremy Jordan, Bruno Mali, Whitney Basher. It's like people have been involved with Diner, Stephen Booth. Like, so many people have done Diner. At some point, I'm like, okay, when are we going to hear all those gorgeous voices singing some of these songs, even if we're not going to see the show? So I'm working on it.
Right.
What happened with it was, I don't know. I think it is a nostalgia piece. It's about the 50s and things in the 50s were not what they are now. Yeah. And I think, unfortunately, I think it could still maybe operate. Like, I think it would do really well on certain circuits, but I think at least the Broadway audience, they were trying to turn it into a modern day version of a show, of a movie that is not modern day in any capacity at all. The gender norms, the way men speak to one another, the way they speak about women, the way women speak to one another and how they talk about their husbands. It was just one of those things where it's like, and this is how I feel about movie musicals. You can't put something that wasn't there to begin with. You can pull something out in the way that Mean Girls pulled out female competition and spun it into the modern age with the tech and with the social media. If there is no female agency in a movie in the 1950s, which is okay, because that was what was happening at that time. That was the true story. I do believe you cannot stick it in there because it feels shoehorned in. It becomes a story that it was not meant to be. And then nobody's happy. It's like the women are shortchanged. The people who loved the movie are shortchanged. We're aware that this all feels false. And so that's sort of why it's like, as much as I understand that movie musicals are going to happen, I just think they've got to be the right one because you cannot be like, oh, this character had no agency in the 60s when the movie came out, but we're going to rewrite it. It's like, if it wasn't there, it's not going to work now.
The movie has to sing, so to speak, in certain ways.
Yeah. And I think it's like, I do think the movie is so good and the screenplay is so good. And it couldn't be a modern musical because it's such a memory piece. It is. It's just a memory piece about this era of the 50s and what that looked like and felt like. And I will say there was one song Sheryl wrote that I got to sing that took you. Have either of you watched that Annie Murphy series? Kevin can beep.
Yeah. Because we had Eric Peterson on the show.
Oh, that's so cool. She wrote one song that was like that moment where the sitcom wife kind of flips. So that was cool. It's like she dug deeper in that. So that was like, let's dig deeper as opposed to let's like plop something and that wasn't there. And that was like a really successful moment. And it's like, I think maybe the show could come back if it figures out how to do that more, but it just, you know, it kind of ran its course, I think.
And that's okay. Not everything needs to go to Broadway, you know?
Oh my God, not at all. And I got so much. It was like my first, it's how I got my equity card. It's how I like learned how to put up a brand new show. It was like such a learning experience.
And speaking of brand new shows, you shared with us before your involvement with Flying Over Sunset. You won't be returning when the show debuts this fall.
I know. This winter, I think. Okay. I think maybe like late November. I won't be returning and I'm bummed and I, you know, feel comfortable talking about this. I took a gamble on myself. I wanted to stay available in case Girls 5 Eva season 2 comes a knocking. And also just to stay available for, you know, I'm trying to lean more into the TV film world, even though theater is like forever my first love.
Oh yeah.
It was one of those things where I think this year and a half, we figured out how to live without it and how to craft an identity without it. And I'm trying to trust that and like make space for something to come in as opposed to, you know, acting out of a scarcity mentality of like, I haven't had a job, so I got to take this one. Even though I do like, I hope everybody goes to see that show because the music is so incredible. But it was, you know, it was a tough call to make, but I was like, it's not the right move for me after this era we just went through.
Good for you. So cool. That's truly brave. I know.
It could all backfire, everybody. Like, talk to me. Flying Over Sunset's going to win like 7,000 Tony Awards. I'm going to be at home being like, oh my God, I made the biggest mistake in my life. and I'm fully mentally preparing for all of that. So
it stars Tony Yazbek, AKA the savior of the Guildhall performance that, that Laura Osnes.
Well, no, that was debunked. That was debunked.
Was it? Yes! The Page Six article literally said that Tony Yazbek.
I feel like he is.
He is just a hero in general. But the statement that was released on Instagram said that he did not. Oh. So there's conflicting sources.
I started sweating at the mention of this. That happened in our world.
Oh my God, I know. Isn't that so insane? It's just wrong of her. But anyway, drama. Erica, I love that you really do use your voice for change online. I guess I'm wondering, a lot of performers don't, and a lot of people choose to stay silent about issues that matter to them. And I can even remember back when you were in Mean Girls, you doing like those book drives and going into the election, your voice was so well welcomed into my feed about getting out the vote and just talking about issues that matter. And I just want to thank you for that. And I guess I'm also wondering, where does that drive come from within you?
Oh, that's a really good question. I mean, I think out of sheer desperation based on this last election cycle. It's so interesting because, you know, I do not like I'm an artist who has an activist streak, but I'm not like an activist, or I think there are people who are activists who are like creating, like on the front lines, really honestly, who provided the information that I wanted to sort of disseminate into the people who care to like follow my social media. So it's funny. I don't know where it comes from. And it's odd because I was telling Kyle about this. The thing I miss most about Mean Girls is not like the affirmation of having a job. It's getting to be a leader in a building. Like I like being a leader. I don't love being a lead. Like I am happy to really do anything as long as I'm given the chance to sort of set the tone or to be like Tina Fey had a great quote on our first day of rehearsal. She was like, the fish rots from the head. And I was like, okay, well, I'm the head of this story. So like, don't rot us into the ground. And that's the thing. It's like, I really do crave that. And I think that is definitely something that like causes that engine inside me of like, I enjoy that responsibility because I just think like, I also just think there's so much false information in the world that if I can be, if I like, you know, I'm not an expert on anything, but if somebody cares about who I am just in terms of my entertainment work, then why would I not try and direct their attention to something that I find, not that the arts are not important, but just as valuable, which is like our involvement in the political discourse. I'm honestly like in a place where I'm struggling because I'm trying to figure out how I do that down the line, like in a sustainable way. and not just like during crazy election cycles. So I don't know. And that's sort of the pickle I find myself in. I'm like, when it's a crazy election cycle, I know exactly what I'm doing, but I want to stay like a source of information and like communal gathering about those things throughout month to month and not just in these crisis moments.
Yeah. Well, we'll stay tuned.
Yeah, exactly. Stay tuned. And if you have any ideas, let me know.
All right. Well, listen, we are sadly wrapping up. I'm literally obsessed with you, but
this is so fun. This is like one of the most fun interviews ever. I have such a joy to talk about all these things.
Oh my God. You're so
Erica,
sweet.
You made my week year even.
But before we say goodbye, we do like to end with our titular segment, Dose of Drama. And it's where we can share something to rant about, rave about. Perhaps it's a pop culture recommendation, something you're doing, something you've seen. And listeners, I have to tell you, this Sunday, after 18 months, I will be sitting in a Broadway theater at the final dress rehearsal for Wicked on Broadway. And I am freaking out.
Yeah.
Can't believe it.
I'm so excited for you.
I don't know how I'll feel.
I don't. When do you think you're going to cry? Like the monkeys?
I don't know. I think it'll be at a moment that I'm not even expecting. Something very random.
Nessa, you're just going to like break.
I always cry during One Short Day when Elphaba and Glinda have like that little moment in the middle of the song where she's like, no one's staring.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I love that. You know what song is a secret tearjerker is Couldn't Be Happier. That song makes like...
Oh, yes.
It's the best Glinda song.
I love that you called it Couldn't Be Happier, which is the famously what the bridge is titled when performed out of context of the show. Did you watch the Wicked thing on PBS?
I did.
And they titled it as I couldn't be, when Cynthia Erivo sang it, they titled it.
Well, what is it actually called?
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness.
But no, like, but canonically it is called I Couldn't Be Happier.
Never played Glinda, you can tell.
When that part is sectioned off.
Oh, you'd be good as Glinda.
The worst thing Gray Henson ever said to me, he was like, you're not a Glinda, you're not an Elfie, you're a Nessa.
Oh.
He also said, he was like, you're not a Joe, you're not an Amy, you're a Beth. And I was like, the one who dies?
But gets to sing that beautiful song. Some things are meant to be.
It'd be worse to be Meg. She gets the least to do. So
she really gets the least to do. I know. And so I was like, all right, well, you didn't give me the worst one.
Gray sounds like an icon in real life.
You got it. You guys will have the best time. I'll make sure you should interview him.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That would be amazing. Well, Connor, I'm excited for you. And guess what? I'll be there with you. So I'm very excited to be here. I'm very excited to be,
spoiler alert, I'll be there
literally too. Driving from Ohio to New York for this. My dose of drama is that pretty hurts. And whenever I get my eyebrows threaded, much like I did today, I don't know if you can really see, they completely tear up my under eye because I'm very sensitive and shy. And it's a necessary pain.
Do you get them waxed?
I just do a threading.
Okay, so you are waxed and threaded, not waxed and waxed.
That's
true. Waxed and threaded, girl.
Maybe I should do waxing. My hair is so light.
No, don't do it. All those waxed and waxed poses, I was like, Jesus, we've gone through enough pain. Like, don't bring us away. We don't need it anymore.
Erica, do you have a dose of drama for us today?
Oh, gosh. Okay, I have two. I have one obsession right now, and it's Molly Shannon. Based on The White Lotus and the other two and just like everything. It's just like, why is she so, she also kind of reminds me of my mom in a way. So there's like this really like tender joy I get from watching her where I'm like comforted and also laughing the whole
Definitely.
Time. So, you know, I think, you know, I love this era of like Catherine Hahn, Jennifer Coolidge, Molly Shannon, where it's like, yes, like I'm ready for Leslie Mann's moment where it's like all these amazing supportive characters are like getting their due. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I just love that. Okay, so I guess my other dose of drama is I thought about this recently because Waitress just reopened and I love that show so much. And I'm like Sarah Bareilles talking about like fish rotting from the head. She's like the greatest leader ever. She was such a great number one on that TV show. And every, like, she was asked like she was called every single day, wrote songs. Like, it was insane what was asked.
Genius.
Rose to the occasion. Yeah, she's incredible. So ages ago, I was called into audition for Dawn. I think they were replacing, it was like the first replacement. Okay. And my rant is that they held the auditions, and now I realize in hindsight, it's probably because Sarah was in rehearsal, but they held the auditions at 7 p.m. at night. Oof. Which, like, I have literally never auditioned for anything after the hours of 5 p.m. because casting directors are like, bye. Yeah. But this was 7 p.m. and this was the worst audition of my life, because I go in, I'm like, normally I'm like entering into like wind down jammy time, yeah, at 7 p.m. because I'm a grandma and we have to sing that crazy wordy song. Uh-huh. Sarah Bareilles is sitting right in front of me, and I never told her this. I need to find out if she remembers this. I forgot the words so many times. And I don't just mean like, oh, I forgot a word. I had to stop cold turkey 3 times. The only way to save myself, I kid you not, was I went, I'm sorry, I don't know if I can do this right now unless I stand behind the piano. And I read the sheet music over the accompanist's shoulder. Like, worst.
But very Dawn, very Dawn.
Very Dawn, until you're like, can she string a sentence of lyrics together? Like, she clearly cannot. So bad. Like, that's definitely like the worst bomb I've ever had. And she was so sweet. She's like, thanks so much for coming in, Erica. And I was like, you don't have to say that.
So do you think she'd remember? Maybe she blacked it out.
She has to. Well, I certainly blacked it out. It's like, when I saw her on the first day of set, I wasn't like feeling the shame of that audition. I was like, yeah, we're gonna like do this thing together. And then like a month later, it came creeping back in, and I was like, oh my God. Oh my God, that was the first time this person laid eyes on me and I laid eyes on her. And it was terrible. Like, the work I did was terrible. Well, I'll ask her one day.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you sharing, because first of all, no one should be holding auditions at that time. And also, it goes to show, you know, you can have these like high highs and low lows, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. And it was a And then I think like the next day I had like a, I think truly one of the next months I had like my Katie audition. So
there you go.
Comes and goes.
There you go.
Comes and goes.
Yeah. And you know what? I've got to say, this last hour or however long we spent together was a high for me. This was a dream come true, Erica. Connor and I love you so much and admire you. And I feel like we're friends now. So this has just been the greatest night.
I do too. This is so fun. Maybe I'll see you at Wicked.
Yeah, honestly.
Yes. But everyone needs to follow you. What are you, where do you want people to find you?
Yes. Find me at my Instagram. It's all I have, at Erica Henningsen, E-R-I-K-A-H-E-N-N-I-N-G-S-E-N. And come see the show at Chelsea Table and Stage on September 19th.
That's right. Yes. Oh, that's going to be like, this is going to come out Wednesday, and then that'll be Sunday. So people need to come and check it all out. Are you doing, it's a brand new show, right?
It's a brand new show. Yes. Which I realize we kind of have to advertise for, because it looks like we're using the same picture. Yeah. It's a brand new show. I'm trying to craft something that's a little less COVID related so I can start doing it as we exit out of this time. And I'm ready to stop talking about it. Yeah. So I'm going to start singing about other stuff.
Amazing.
Love it. Well, everyone's got to go buy tickets to see this new show. And everyone, listeners, thank you for joining us for this episode. Follow at The Drama Podcast. Follow Dylan at Dylan McDowell. Follow me at Connor McDowell.
Connor, I'll see you next time.
Drama.